Hey, Andrew, this is Henry from UCSC iGEM. I was wondering if you might be able to give me a rundown of some of your experience with bioreactors and some of the technical considerations that you've encountered in the process of designing bioreactors for different types of bacterial cultures.
Now, I'm not a designer. I don't physically design them, but I've worked with bioreactors and growing cell lines, those type of things,
sure,
for pharmaceutical companies.
Uh-huh. And in your experience, what have been some of the main constraints in actually designing or rather implementing bioreactors for various, say, in your case, pharmaceutical applications?
So you want to know what some of the major implications would be?
Yeah. Some of the major implications, any technical problems that you...
So I can give you some of the major implications on some of the bioreactors would be, let's say I'll use it for an instance, for a case would be, downtime, would be contaminations, turnaround time, depending on, your cell line, sterilization, cleaning, CIP, COPs,
sure,
those type of things.
And so for most of this, it sounds like it's mainly just a matter of housing the culture and keeping it free of other contaminants. And
correct.
How is this usually done? Is it just through simple sterilization, or?
Well, it was done. It starts out from the very beginning, from pre-culture on. So if you're when you're in pre-culture and you're scaling up a cell line, everything from that point on has to be maintained at a sterile components, and then up to the point where you're inoculating a bioreactor. Say you go to 100 liter inoculation from your scale up, and then from the 100 liter you're inoculating into a 1,000 liter bioreactor, and and then trying to maintain sterility, which also counts for because it's pumped internally through stainless steel lines and
So if you're inoculating the culture, then it sounds like it carries down all the way through the entire manufacturing process.
Correct, all the way upstream, downstream. Yep.
Yeah. And so you mentioned stainless steel. Are there various material concerns for maintaining that sterility?
99% of everything was just 316L stainless.
Uh-huh. And is that also just because of requirements for...
It requires FDA requirement, and it's also, the least amount of anything, for corrosions, for cleaning, for acids, for things like that.
And is there any particular kind of stainless
steel? Or glass,
steel?
If you had, say, if it was glass-lined or something like that, it could be the same.
Sure. And is it just any stainless steel in general, or are there categories, for example, for pharmaceutical applications, you have to use, like, 316 stainless, or...
Yes, it's 316L.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Not 304 or nothing. It has to be 3. That's the FDA-approved material for that.
Okay. I guess what I'm wondering is from what you've encountered, besides sterility, what are some of the applications of bioreactors that you've had to utilize? Now, for pharmaceuticals, is that mm-hmm. mainly just producing byproducts, or?
Well, you're scaling. Yeah, you're growing a particular cell lines. They usually is a hybrid based on a mouse line that's producing a particular protein, and that mm-hmm. protein is being produced to be used to make a certain drug that's then it gets stored.
Sure. And then in terms of the output of a bioreactor, are there any classifications for what then has to be done with some of these, what might be considered biohazard materials, or
once you do a 60, say you do a 60, you have 9 bioreactors up, you got one up coming down all the time, so they're doing a 60-day run. So basically what happens is what's left after the material, because it goes through a spin filter, that all has to be, killed, so to speak.
Sure.
We use a caustic solution to do that.
Um, And I guess my question is...
Basically sodium hydroxide.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And then I guess one of my final questions is, in terms of actually growing cultures, what are some of the environmental factors that one has to consider for maintaining a culture?
Environmental factors?
Mm-hmm.
You have to, well, main things would be our temperature. The main temperature, you know, they say 37 degrees C, 37, making sure your small temperature, sterility, the type of media, the type of cell line, pretty much having, if you're, say you're in the pre-culture stages, implications such as, you know, in an incubator, making sure it's, has the correct, temperature, moisture, CO2, which controls pH.
Sure. And do you think that the carbon dioxide concentration is as vital a factor as something like acidity or temperature?
Well, yeah. I mean, it usually generally we'll say 3% to 5%, no more, because then it becomes toxic.
Uh-huh.
And now it's also media dependent. I mean, there's certain medias that you can grow cell lines in where, you know, you're not so much controlling the pH depending.
And for that oxygen or carbon dioxide supply, can that just be taken from the outside, or does that also have to be?
No, the oxygen, when you say from the outside, the oxygen and the CO2 are coming from a source that's usually filtered. Okay, the cells themselves produce their own gas into the headspace that has to be bled out, depending on, so a certain amount of pressure doesn't build up and a certain amount of toxicity doesn't build up.
Okay, well, I think that's about it. Is there anything else that you might have worked with, like chemostatic interfaces versus batch production and what some of the cost-benefit ratios are for each of those?
It depends. You're talking static versus batch?
Yeah.
Well, static batch production is, of course, it's more advantageous than static itself. I mean, you have continuous production because you're constantly feeding, you know, that bioreactor, and it's constantly producing for, say, let's say, we'll say 60-day period versus static, where you're going to get a lot of buildup of, static environmental factors that are toxic to the environment. Whereas in the batch, you're constantly replacing the media, and the cell content that you want to be is being removed and, you know, say into a spin filter and pumped. So you're constantly going for a 60-day period, but then you run into a phase where the cell line eventually starts to die down, and then you go into, for the lag phase and all, and eventually you have to bring it down and, start from a new batch.
And that's a downtime that you were talking
that's
about.
That's the downtime. Right. So it's important to get them turned around as quickly as possible, especially if you're running on a 24-hour a day, work schedule.
Okay. Well, I think that answers just about all the questions I have.
Okay.
Thank you for your assistance.
Yes, sir.
Cool. Have a good one.
Yep. Take care. Bye-bye.